dedicated to all the hackers and the crackers.
To the hackers and the crackers.
I see in binary, I speak source code. Step on my toes, I'll post a million JPEGs of you in a fag pose. In your digital stance, sitting firewalled ho. Cause I'm riding the net in my 6-4. I was a dick with my 56. Now with my cable, I'm able to get that stable. On the out, my name is Ace and I'm a Leo. On the digital highway, my name is Neo and I'm a hero. In a flash, I'll sue you on burning Dreamcast. You need some ISO? Let me through my hard drive rifle. Our exchange you could never stifle. In a digital hug, you just caught the love bug. I bootlegged your CD. I caused the fight between Un and Jay-Z. You see, G, it's all gonna be free. Whether we take it by force or we take it nicely. You feel that rattle in your bones? When I tell you we just hacked Dow Jones. And NASDAQ leaves you flat on your back. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack.
Dedicated to the hackers and the crackers. Serial codes, source codes, ISO, RAM, SIP.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Binary Revolution Radio number 110.
Today's air date, August 23rd, 2005. And Strom is back with us. He's been released by North Korea for attempting to hacksaw their phone system.
Oh, is that where I was?
Yes. Yeah, we actually had a couple of excuses for you last week. I think North Korea is a new one.
Mm-hmm.
I think we actually put you down. Last week, you put you down in Camp X-ray in Guantanamo.
Ah,
so
I see.
Yeah,
I had a blindfold on the whole time. I really didn't know where I was. So,
yes, he was with a national marionette version of Kim Jong Il or whatever it is. I don't even know how to pronounce his damn name. I just see it online all the time. Yeah, so this is another episode of Binary Revolution Radio, still alive and kicking. And, you know, get Strom back. No special guests this week, because we're just going to kick back and rehash our DEF CON presentation. Because more than a few people requested it, and we decided to give the masses what they want. Probably these 10 people that said they wanted it are the only 10 people that want to listen to it. But, you know, we're going to try to – it's a hefty presentation, but we're going to try.
Real talk. Like the guy in those FedEx commercials from the 80s.
Yes, there we go. God. FedEx, or was that? Yeah, no, that was FedEx.
That was
it?
FedEx, yes.
Oh, God. Isn't he dead?
I don't recall whether that guy who talks really fast is dead.
I think he is, sadly.
Well, Moog died on Monday.
Oh, yes, Moog. Well, we can talk about this. It's a little kind of news related, and it's hacking related. You want to go give a presentation, not presentation, but a little introduction on him?
Yes. Robert Moog, I think, was the guy who invented the Moog synthesizer.
The first synthesizer ever.
Necessarily the first, but it was, I think, the first commercially successful one.
True. That could be it. That could be the first. I'm not sure. He did a lot of work with it.
Mm-hmm.
They really hail him as the founder of synthesizers. That word never rolls off the tongue easy with me.
Synthesizers.
Yes. Synthesizer. Yes. It was a very cool story. I was reading something on news.bbc.co.uk about him, and he was a very interesting character. Of course, he doesn't have any, you know. The other question is, I always wondered what's up with these synthesizer people who have weird last names like ARP and Moog.
ARP was the guy's initials. It was Aaron Perlman or something.
Oh, really? I thought it was his last name. I thought it was something ARP.
Yeah, no, it was the initials.
I stand corrected. Anyway, we're drifting already. Boy, this is scaring me a bit. See, this is why we need like a third person here to keep us on track. We have a couple of housekeeping things tonight. We have Sid, C-I-D, and he tells us the street name for the Denver 2600 troop is Arapaho, and he says, like the Native Americans, at which point I say, what Native Americans?
Also, like the county.
Well,
so
Denver
is in Arapaho County, of course.
Well, I don't know that.
I do.
I live in Essex.
I've been to Denver.
I live in Essex, and then I go into Boston, which is Middlesex.
I live in Los Angeles County, and then I go to school in Los Angeles County, and then I go to work in Los Angeles County. So,
yes. Los Angeles County is just amazingly huge, so.
Yes. As we established 2 weeks ago, didn't we?
Yeah, I think that's where I learned that. And we have, I'm going to butcher this name. He included some type of pronunciation key, but I couldn't understand it. It's Ruach. It's he capitalized U, so I guess what's where the emphasis is. And he's our current leader for the youngest listener contest, as he is 12. So congratulations, I guess, for being young or something.
Yes, congratulations on listening at such a young age and expanding your horizons and blah, 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 blah.
All that stuff. Yeah. Do you have any housekeeping tonight?
I certainly do. I would like to announce that I'm going to start doing a segment, or at least try to start doing a segment on the show, where I review music. And what I would like to do...
Completely unrelated to hacking, but we won't get into that.
Yes. Well, no, I mean, it is sort of semi-related, because this is Binary Revolution Radio, I figure, and part of the Binary Revolution is the availability of all sorts of cool music for free online. We kind of did this already with our closing music, but it would be nice to have people actually send us songs and have us review them.
Indeed. And actually, this is where it all sort of stemmed from, because we were running out of it. I was sick and tired of actually just randomly going around and picking out music from, like, once again, epitonic.com. That's a really fun site to play around with. So I just, you know, Strong came up to me and said, hey, why don't I do this? And I was like, it sounds weird. But actually, no, we need music, so go right ahead.
Yeah. So anyone out there, if you're in a band or you write music or whatever, and you like to let us review it at least, send it to – do we have a place for them to send it?
Just send it to you right now, I think.
Yeah, just send it to me directly, stromcarlson@gmail.com.
Or, radio.binrev.com. Don't use that, because I don't think the space on it can handle the large amount of files. So
or get in
stay
touch
away
with
from
me
that
first, and we'll figure out a way to transfer the file or something.
Yes, we'll find a way to get your music, and we'll include it on the show if it's good.
Yeah,
if it's up to Strom's insanely high standards.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll just do a review of it, you know, and my review, of course, is no indication as to whether or not you should actually listen to it. So even if I say it sucks, download it and listen to it. And form
Strom's
your own opinion.
Be in a little, going to be in a little director's chair.
Yeah,
going to say it stinks. A little balding. It's going to sound like a what's the guy's name? Jay Sherman. That's what.
Jay Sherman from The Critic. Yeah.
Yeah. I forget who was the voice. John Lovett. That's it. Okay.
Right. Also
before
balding.
Yes, also balding indeed. Okay. Is that it?
So, and preferably. You know, if you've got, like, a demo disc or something with a bunch of songs on it, I'd love to review that. Or, if not, just one song will do, and I'll try and review the one song.
Sounds like a plan. All right. I guess we should go into email now. Do you think we should go into email?
I think we should go into email as soon as I put the pasta sauce on this pasta.
Anyway, our first email tonight is from DeBeeve, from Telefreak.com fame, or Telefreak.org, whatever it is. He says, woo, go Pearl. There was one part of the show in which you discussed reporting with Pearl. Great thing to check out is PDF API 2. This allows you to create PDF files on the fly. Granted, it takes a bit of playing around to get, but it is nice. Besides, we all know that managers love the PDF format. And I will fully agree with that managers love PDF. And developers love PDF, too, so we'll go into this. PDF API 2 is pretty cool, and I find it's a lot easier to use than PHP's PDF library. I still have nightmares. In reality, that's really not saying much that it's better than PHP, but we won't get into that.
Like being the tallest midget.
Yeah, exactly. There we go. One of the things I do like about Perl, and for PDF that matter, is the forms function. And I've been really fooling around with that at work because, once again, managers love PDFs. And I like to make little pre-created forms where it's just, you know, just have to fill it out. Basically what you do is you create a PDF and then you fill in all kinds of little text boxes that are assigned field names. And you can fill all kinds of, you know, dynamic data into there. And it's a lot of fun. I've been trying to automate a lot of stuff with that at work, and it's gone over amazingly well. And with PDF, it can be basically faxed, emailed, you know, printed out, anything you want. it's a whole lot easier than designing the form in your program, but it's a little less cooler, and because you do it, it's all WYSIWYG. That's the big plus about it, you know. But once again, you know, what else are you going to use? Word? That's I just have nightmares about that. Our next email tonight is Chuck in Maryland.
You want me to read this one?
Oh, sure, go right ahead.
Okay. Chuck writes, "Dear Black Ratchet and Strom Carlson, I like the show. Keep up the good work. I'm glad that you spent last week talking about Perl. Perl is one of our greatest weapons for automating tasks. I love how you can write a little Perl code to piece together other tools and modules to do something fairly complicated. One of my favorite features of Perl is the backtick syntax, which will easily run any command line tool with any command line options and put the output into a Perl variable. Then you can parse the output with Perl's powerful text parsing capabilities to determine if the command was successful, and if necessary, pull out information needed for the next command. In short, it rocks. Anyway, I just wanted to point this out in case some listeners are not aware of this powerful feature. Have a good one."
And I thought there was more to that, so I'm going to go edit out that,
that
pause gap right there.
Also edit
anyway,
out the part
Chuck.
Where I stumbled.
Yeah. Anyway, Chuck. One of the it's cool with like the backtick syntax. I'm just stumbling over words tonight. It's cool with the backtick feature, and it's a cool feature. But there are tons of tutorials online that just list like line after line of caveats about it. It's a whole, you know, sending. You gotta really watch your back and make sure everything is scrubbed up if you're ever taking user input and putting it into a.
Wouldn't that be really watch your backtick?
Yes. Ooh, aren't we getting fancy tonight?
Oh, yes.
Yes. Well, yes, watch your back ticks. The safer way that people recommend is the system function, which is, you know, it's basically system and, you know, you put your – it's the same thing. It doesn't actually write it out to a variable, but what I usually do in it is I usually write the output to a file, at which point I can safely muck about and rip everything apart and put it back together and grab what I need to it and then run the next command, much like you would do in the backtick syntax. So it doesn't actually, you know, it's not as simple as using the backtick, but it's a lot safer and it has a lot of more sanity checks with it. And I just like to point out there are tons of powerful features in Perl. You just need to find them. Another thing I noticed in your email is how you were just saying how Perl just takes all kinds of small bits and you can string them together and make powerful utilities. That's the entire Unix idea right there. It's, you know, all just designed to have all kinds of small little utilities. You string them together and you make this giant thing. And that way you don't need to include all the bloat. So
what? No, this is a new concept.
Yeah, the bloat is... No, it was the old concept that apparently people forgot in the 1980s when they were designing Windows. Yeah, we won't get into that. That's another show topic entirely. Anyway, our homework assignment last week was to send in your Apple experiences, and boy, did we receive quite a few responses, most of which varied from neutral to positive. We didn't actually get a scathing review of Apple in the entire week, which I was quite surprised about. Yes, yeah, so, well, you already did yours. You kind of inspired this.
Well, no, I've got an even more scathing review now.
But have you had a more scathing review?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
what
yeah.
happened now? We'll have to go over that. We'll do that in your personal hacking stories.
Okay.
Right now, we got like about 10 or so, and I picked the most two I'm using on the air. One positive and the most negative one we could find, which was not too negative in the first place. And I just want to say thank you for everyone who wrote in. I'll go read the, you know, LifeWarp, who's our first email, and he says, "I've abused most of my products. I had an iPod mini that was carried around for 9 months. I banged it up and drowned it in the sink at one point. Finally, it died after being electrocuted in an accident while wiring an old house. I swear, capitalized, exclamation points, I turned off the breaker, and I did, only it was mislabeled. I currently have a 20-gigabyte iPod and a 999 iBook, last series, that was been dropped downstairs on a cement floor and thrown out of a moving vehicle. See the accident at http://tinyurl.com/charlie7yankee-oscar-uniform. It also survived an aftermarket DL-DVD+WRW/RAM drive." Wow. if you look at this URL that he sent in, this iBook went through World War III almost. I just want to wonder what the hell happened to that car. It was mucked up to no, like it's almost irrecognizable. It's disgusting.
Let's pull it up and take a look.
Yes. Oh, you haven't checked it out? Oh God, it's a hoot. And I think it's hilarious that this person apparently took these pictures right after the accident. So
I think that's what you do. You pull out your camera and you take photos for insurance purposes.
Yeah, but he took all kinds of photos. He was getting very artsy almost, I would like to say. Well,
wow,
and
that thing is upside down, mashed and.
Yeah, I'm surprised the iBook survived, and I'm more impressed that these people survived afterwards. please email us and tell us what the heck happened. We will definitely read your email on air because I'm just dead curious. Anyway, out of all the emails we got, you had the most abused equipment. You seem to have the most unluckiest life in the world. Seriously, I want to know, how the heck did your iPod end up being electrocuted? Were you just shoving it in outlets for fun? I mean, even if you did cut the breaker, what were you doing to it? I'm not sure if I want to know. Jeez. So, LifeWarp, you win gratuitous kudos for the most entertaining story, at least, or something. I don't know. Congratulations, I guess. And just be careful. God, I don't want to know what's going to happen to you. And
probably end up folded up like the iBook.
Yeah, goodness. I'm curious how far that iBook flew after that accident, because, boy, that sounds like a mess right there.
Yeah.
Our next email is from Sporty, and Sporty says, "Hey, guys, I've had a great and meh experience with Apple in the past 3 years." And he goes on the list. G4 GrabPipe, 450 PPC, rock solid, about 3 years old. iPod, 5 GB, first generation. It died after about 3.5 or so years. The Centronics connector broke internally. The Centronics connector has a very small circuit board that is attached very nicely to it on the inside. The tiny board is hooked up to a larger board and by several small connecting wires. The small circuit board is attached to the case by several tabs. After years of plugging and unplugging, those tabs snap, which caused the wires to only support the connector and the main board. Sadly, they broke. Fourth generation iPod mini, 6 months old, solid. Third generation iPod, 20 gigabytes, present. Won't remember, it hits audible click setting. It won't stay off after a complete battery drain. iBook G4, 12 inches, PPC 900. After about a year and the circuit board died, got a blue line across the screen horizontally, and pushing the CPU too much caused a freeze. Wow, like, I gotta say, you have a lot of Apple equipment, and out of all your stuff that you said, I gotta agree with Strom's opinion that Apple has become a lot more craptacular recently, as he would say. And I guess the other point of this email, I'd like to state, is this is very highly unscientific, and as always, your mileage may vary. But, boy, he has a lot of stuff. I like to say that I have two pieces of Apple equipment. Technically I have four if you really want to count the mouse and keyboard. But I have a blue and white G3, which is probably about 3.5 years old, maybe 4. I have no clue. And it works fine. And I also have my iPod, which I mentioned before. And beyond the battery life that has recently suffered, my second pair of iPod headphones are starting to fall apart. One of the outside shells of the has started to crack, and it separates, so it dangles by a wire, which is really, really annoying for an earbud because it just sort of falls apart in your ear. But either way.
Well, I think you really should replace those anyway. From what I hear, I don't know how true this is, but you're more likely to get mugged while wearing white earphones.
Honestly, at this point, they can probably have it, you know. Oh, my God, I got an iPod. Wait a minute, it only lasts like 30 minutes on a single charge.
Well, what about those aftermarket battery kits?
I'm actually thinking about sending it into Apple. I've recently found out that they've dropped their iPod repair service thingy to like $60-$65 or something. And that's something I'll consider because it's a whole hell of a lot cheaper than a new iPod.
Right, but if I can get apparently the batteries online are even cheaper than that.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I think it's like, you know, $65 for, you know, shipping replacement, and they'll send you a refurb out. And one of the fun things about refurbs is you never know if you're going to get something a slightly better. And if even if they send me a different model, it's going to be better than what I have because I have the lowest end model possible.
The very first one.
Yes, the first one. That's where it is. That'd be cool if I had 10 gigs. I'd be like, yeah, 100% more storage. All right, go me. Actually, I was watching my local news station. We'll go sort of segue into a story about this. And they were talking about, you know, how Apple is a mean corporation because they do not send you your identical iPod back. And I just looked at that and said, that's an RMA. What did you expect? And I was just shocked how the entire concept of the RMA system, which for someone like me who was a sysadmin for more than a few years, was, you know, it's very, you know, intricately familiar with. And, you know, I'm very familiar with it, and it just seems so odd that someone just did not understand the concept of RMA stuff.
Well, that's what we call a slow news day.
Yeah. Well, no, it was part of their whole, you know, consumer awareness, blah, 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 blah. You know,
yeah.
their
slow
consumer reporter. She usually has her stories on. It doesn't have to be a slow news day. They usually allot her five minutes every week where she reports something, and she decided to pick on Apple this week. Susan Warnick, if you're listening, nice hair. I don't know.
Nice hair.
Well, she used to have like this horrible 80s hair, and
then
she actually got on
sense knocked into her. And
well, no. She went on like Oprah, or I think it was Oprah, some talk show, and because they had like bad hairstyles or bad looks from people, newscasters across the country, and she made the cut. So they gave her like a remake or something. It sounds Oprah-ish, so I wouldn't be surprised. Yes, this has been Rev Radio. We're talking about Oprah.
Can I pick a one?
Yeah, tell me about it. So anyway, let's go into a personal show and tell here. I spent most of my week watching our tech monkeys at work clean up the Zotob, or I don't know how to pronounce it, to be honest with you. And that was fun because about 2 years ago, I'd be doing that, and I'd probably be doing it a whole lot better than they were doing it. I found it incredibly amusing that Microsoft released this patch a week before the virus came out, and we have this, you know, quote-unquote intricate patch release system in which, you know, it has to go through an approval process. In reality, they tested it for about 6 hours, and they said, okay, all you people apply this to your servers, and they never applied it to any of my department's servers, and I just laughed when I found that one out. I actually don't think we were owned by it because we were thankfully running Windows 2003, which is theoretically it's not invulnerable, but it's a little more difficult to be infected by it that way. And yeah, I dodged a bullet, but I was enjoying watching everyone else run around like screaming their heads cut off and just critiquing them. It's fun to look on it's fun to be on the outside and looking in.
Always.
Yeah, I also rescued Strom from North Korea, or wherever he was last week.
Yes, Ratchet personally came to laugh me out of the detention facility.
Yes, I called up Juan from South America, and I rented a Black Hawk, and it was really cool. If you ever saw Rambo, it was a lot like that. Except, you know,
I thought it was more like the rescue scene in Brazil.
Oh, no, you were wearing a blindfold. How did you know? Anyway. My big news story. I don't think I actually ever told anyone this besides exclaiming it in the IRC channel. Yapple has hit 2,000 phones.
Yay!
And, 2,000 phones. And I knew that was on the horizon, and I actually came to a shocking realization about right after DEF CON that we have over 160 registered users, which is, wow, that's a lot of people. So in accordance to that, I actually expanded out all of our quote-unquote top five lists, and I now made them top 10 lists. So
Dave Letterman's hot on your heels now.
Oh, yes, you know, because top 10 was just never around before he was there.
Of course.
Yeah. What have you been doing? What you were talking about your Apple woes. What Apple woes do you have this week?
For those of you who aren't familiar with my Apple iPod disaster, I had an iPod that just, you know, up and died on me. It wouldn't charge. It wouldn't play. It was just all sorts of screwed up. So I went to Apple and I said, hey, look, it won't charge and play at the same time. So it turns out the USB was fried. After much argument, they finally gave me a replacement, and all was good until my replacement stopped charging in the car. And so I figured, well, this is fantastic. And I went back to the Apple store, and I said, hey, look, it's broken again. They said, oh, no, blah, 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 blah. It can't be possibly be broken. It's not our thing, but our hardware is perfect, blah, 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 blah. So he plugs it into the Mac and works perfectly there. And so at this point, I decide to go for broke because I figure I haven't actually tested it with my computer at home, but I imagine that it's the same problem at this point. So I say, well, you know, it doesn't work with any of my equipment at home, my charger, my computer, anything. So, no, there's nothing we can do about it. It looks fine. So he pulls up a diagnostic where it shows the USB power thing. It shows 0 when there's no power on the USB and a 1 when there is. So he plugs it in and he says, it seems to be working fine. The 1 shows up. So he said, let me take this back to my car and see if it does that. So I go back to the car, plug it in. USB power turns 1, but the iPod won't charge, which I think is kind of odd.
That's really weird.
Yeah. So I go back and I say, hey, you know what? The USB power says 1, but it will not actually charge in the car. He says, well, there's nothing we can do. You're plugged into a third-party piece of equipment in the car. I said, well, do you have something here that you can give me that I can test it with? And so he says, yeah, and then he walks off and he comes back. No, actually, I just realized that would be third-party equipment too, so we can't do a damn thing. So at this point, I lose it, and I just glare at the guy, and I say, well, do you have any Apple brand lube so I can go fuck myself like you're asking me to?
And what did he respond to that?
He didn't quite know how to respond to it.
So what is your current status of your iPod that works but sort of doesn't? And,
well,
I don't
know.
It
seems to work fine as long as I plug it into the computer.
That's really weird. I actually was thinking about getting a FireWire charger for my car, since considering my battery only lasts about 2 hours or so, and that, you know, it'd be handy to have a charger in the car. It'd also be handy to have
actually, while I was on vacation, I suddenly needed to. My fun hacking story of the week is that I was trying to load a new album onto my iPod at my parents' house before we left for the lake. I mean North Korea.
North Korea.
Before we left for North Korea. And so I mounted the iPod.
The lake in North Korea. That was it. There it is.
Yeah. My iPod wouldn't actually connect to my computer. So I figured, something's wrong with the computer, it won't connect. So I plugged it into the Linux box downstairs and tried to mount the iPod via NFS. I sort of kind of succeeded, but only because this was the first time I had ever set up NFS, and I could read from the iPod, but any time I tried to write, I could create a file, but I wouldn't be able to actually write any data. So I ended up hosing the iTunes database on the iPod. Yeah. Which meant that I went to go listen to music in the car on the way there, and nothing showed up on the list. So, but I did, so I figured, you know, okay, if I get a FireWire cable, I'll be able to use the iPod with my laptop. So I eventually found a FireWire cable which came with a car charger in Page, Arizona. And I did actually get my iPod working, but I haven't tried that charger in my car yet. So I should do that.
Yes. Right now what I have is I have a I don't have something for my car, but my work, I have a workstation with FireWire on it. Unfortunately, it runs Windows, and my iPod is Mac. So I basically have to plug it in, but because it's in the computer, it tries to mount it all the time, and I can't play the songs. And it just drives me up a wall. I so need a wall jack for it. So for some reason, I've lost mine. I have no idea how I did that, but I did.
Well, you could always go to your friendly neighborhood Apple store and purchase some Apple brand lube. The FireWire plug thing.
Well, see, I'm not sure if they still have that because it's just so damn old. I saw
one at the Apple store.
Oh, I'll have to go over there, my Apple store in the North Shore Mall at Danvers. Because I know, like, they have, like, all the docking stuff, but I don't have the docking port, and it makes me sad.
And it's just, you know.
They
do have the AC adapter with the FireWire port on the back of it, so you just get the FireWire cable and plug it into both ends.
Oh, I guess I'll have to look at that then. Damn them. Damn them to hell.
We're Apple. Throw us your money.
Yeah, it's going to be like $50. Something always ticked me off about Apple is I bought a keyboard and a mouse from them. And normally a keyboard and a mouse would cost somewhere around $30, but because they're Apple-branded products, it cost me close to $70. And it just drove... All right, before I go into this, let's just go straight into our top main topic tonight, which is basically... Asterisk Redux 2005 extended non-extended edition. I don't know.
This is an abbreviated version of the talk we gave at DEF CON.
Yes. This is if you want, I'll probably put this up on my site. So if you want to follow along, we're actually reading directly off the PowerPoint. Sorry, OpenOffice slides that we did. What is this? What is the OpenOffice presentation?
OpenOffice Impress, I think.
No, I think it's Presenter or something.
Is it? It's called Impress on my system.
Oh, really? I thought Impress was... It doesn't say. It just says OpenOffice. Oh, well, whatever. The OpenOffice PowerPoint. Yeah, the OpenOffice PowerPoint clone. So anyway, would you like to get started?
Sure.
All right. This is how to be your own telephone company with Asterisk.
Presented by Strom Carlson and Black Ratchet, DEF CON 13, July 2005. This was rated a bullshit presentation by Alex.net.
Yes, it's a website, al3x.net, and they rated what's cool, what's okay, and what's cool, what might be okay, and what's bullshit at DEF CON 13. And we were rated bullshit, along with 90% of the other presentations there. Along with Stanks, which really ticked me off, but
yeah.
we had fun, you know, with that, and we decided to put that right on our title slide.
All right, let's get started here. Let me actually set this up so I can. There we go. We're just gonna skip the brief history of telephone switching because we.
Oh, we are? Okay.
Yeah.
Basically, there's been telephone switching since 1890, and it's been culminated to such a thing as Asterisk.
Which is now this PBX. Well, actually, what is Asterisk is the first slide. Asterisk is a free open source PBX that runs on Linux, and it is, without question, the best thing since sliced bread. Basically, it's a PBX you run on any Linux box. You can run it under your desk, on your laptop, in colo somewhere, wherever you need telephony. And it's a great, great tool. It was originally written by Mark Spencer of Digium.com and now has a large number of contributors, though Mark is very, very heavily involved in the project.
I think he's more than neck deep into it.
Yes. He is, in fact, suffocating underneath the weight of it.
I wouldn't go that far because he's still doing fine, but...
Yes. So
he's working right along, but he's still intricately involved in the design process and the coding process.
Yes. And, oh, for those of you trying to follow along with the slideshow, we unfortunately don't have a thing like you had in the children's book where when you hear the tone, advance the slide. So we'll just
follow along. It becomes incredibly obvious.
Yes. So why Asterisk? Well, first off, should we do this together?
Of course.
It's free!
How much are you paying your PBX vendor right now? That's what I want to know.
The software itself is free. I'm paying my PBX vendor, you know, countless amounts of money. He and I have a very, very personal relationship.
We're not going there.
Anyway, Asterisk is this, you know, totally free open source PBX. There is a version of Asterisk called Asterisk Business Edition, which you can pay Digium money for, and it's a very, very stable, very, very well-supported version of Asterisk. But for the vast majority of circumstances, you won't need that. You can just run the either stable version or, if you want to be on the hemorrhaging edge of things, the CVS head version.
Like Strom and I.
Yes, we're CVS head junkies. We haven't touched stable in God knows how long.
Stable is for wussies.
Or for mission critical applications.
True.
So, Asterisk runs on commodity PC hardware.
pretty much any PC you have lying around will run Asterisk. I mean, not if it's a 386, but for the most part, we'll show you in a minute how almost any PC will run Asterisk. It has broad support for VoIP protocols and hardware. Pretty much the goal of Asterisk is to work with almost everything.
Like Linux.
Yes. So if you've got some piece of telephony equipment, chances are you can either have it talk with Asterisk right out of the box, or tweak it a bit and get it to talk to Asterisk.
Indeed. And we both proved that.
Mm-hmm. It's very easy to interconnect with other Asterisk boxes, and you can form your own VoIP network, really, and that's kind of what Ratchet and I have done.
This is all over our Asterisk boxes right now. We're actually recording the show on Asterisk.
Yep.
That's how we always done it.
Mm-hmm. We're both talking on Cisco VoIP phones, which talk to our Asterisk boxes, which are talking to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And Asterisk is configurable to do almost whatever you want it to do. You can tweak it to your needs. You can write it to your own. You can write your own code if you feel it's necessary. Asterisk will unfortunately not do your dishes, but we're working on that module. That's the dish dial tone module, or was it Chan dish?
Chan dishwash. Chan underscore dishwasher .so.
That's it.
Yes.
Okay. Section, Asterisk and hardware. The physical, tangible stuff. In case you didn't know what hardware was. Anyway, if you go to this wiki on voipinfo.org, voip-info.org, sorry, there's a page called Asterisk Dimensioning, where people post, you know, their stress test of Asterisk and what they have it running on and how much it'll support. Someone running a 133 megahertz Pentium 1 with 16 megabytes of RAM got 3 concurrent calls going before quality degraded.
Which is just simply amazing.
Mm-hmm. Considering that I think 133 megahertz Pentium 1s are borderline for playing MP3s even.
If you don't do anything else with it, it'll run fine. I mean, Yes, just don't do anything with it. It will probably become painful if it even thinks even a little bit.
Yeah. But pretty much the upshot of this is that any PC you have lying around will work. A 2.4 gigahertz P4 with 512 megabytes of RAM did 790 simultaneous calls. So your PC will more than handle the load you're going to put through it unless you are going to put hundreds of calls through it at the same time, in which case you are insane.
I'm running my Asterisk box and a dual processor 433 Celeron, so it runs fine. I've never done it.
Yeah, I'm running my Asterisk box on a 1 GHz P3 with 384 megs of RAM, and I haven't had a single whimp of trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So let's get into the telephones that you can buy. You can either there are several options for Asterisk hardware as far as the actual voice terminal goes. You have the choice of purchasing a VoIP telephone that just plug into your Ethernet network and have it talk to your Asterisk box, or you can purchase a terminal adapter and plug an analog telephone into the terminal adapter and plug your terminal adapter into the network and have it talk VoIP to wherever, or you can get a card from Digium which goes into your Asterisk box, which you plug analog telephones directly into. So we're going to go over the various types of phones you can buy. The popular VoIP telephones, the two pretty much generally considered to be the cream of the crop as far as these goes, are the Cisco 7960 and the Polycom IP600. Ratchet and I both have 7960s that we're talking on right now.
Yay!
And you can buy these used on eBay for generally about $250
to $300. Or so. There's deals to be had. I picked up my 7960 for $120 or so. Mm-hmm. At the MIT Flea. So, I mean, there's deals to be had. You just have to look out for it.
We won't go into what biological favors Ratchet had to perform in order to get the Cisco 7960 that cheaply, but
I am still trying to repress those memories.
The SNOM 190 is a more mid-range phone that's $175 to $250, although I think you can get them cheaper these days. And that's kind of, you know, it's not as nice as the Cisco, but it's a pretty passable VoIP phone.
I'm still waiting for the SNOM Carlson.
Yeah, I'm really in trouble if SNOM ever makes a phone called the Carlson.
And there's also the Grand Scream Budgetone, isn't it? Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, yeah. The Grand Scream, not the Grand Scream, well, maybe that is a better name for it. But the Grand Stream Budgetone 100 is the kind of very low-end VoIP telephone. It's roughly comparable in quality to that $5 telephone set you buy at the drugstore.
Except, and that's not an exaggeration. These phones are not very high quality. But I have sort of a take-up on it called a NetWeb 302, and the dial tone essentially sounds like this. And it's disgusting to use, and I'm really regretting that I ever bought it.
Waste of money unless you're really, really broke or you're just, you know, looking for some cheap VoIP phone to play around with.
Yes, it's a cheap VoIP phone to play around with, and I learned my lesson.
Yes. But that's from $40 to $75 if you want to buy that online. So, VoIP terminal adapters. The one that you can buy from Digium is called the IXY. That's
IAXY.
Yes, IAXY. Although IAX, as it turns out, is pronounced EX. So it's not IAX. But the Digium IXY is a great little tiny, it's absolutely ridiculously tiny. It's got one Ethernet port on the back and one analog telephone port, of course, a power jack. And it speaks asterisk's native EX protocol, which we'll get into in a bit. And that's $100. You can also get third-party equipment. There's the Sepura SPA-2002, which is also surprisingly tiny, and that is, instead of speaking EECS, it speaks SIP, as you would gather from their name. Sepura.
Yes, we'll cover these later.
Mm-hmm. We'll cover all this later. And so that has one Ethernet port and two telephone ports on the back of it, and that's $70. So you can do two stations. And the Sepuras just are surprisingly configurable. When you buy them unlocked, they come with, God, an option to do everything. Like there was, I plugged a Western Electric phone into one, and it wouldn't ring correctly for some reason. I looked on the configuration page, and to my surprise, there's actually a setting to configure the frequency of the ring voltage that the thing sends out. It was set at 25 hertz, and I set it back to 20 hertz, and my Western Electric phone rang beautifully.
Yay!
So that's what that was. There's also models you can get where you actually route the rest of your network traffic through the terminal adapter, so that when you place heavy loads on your network, the terminal adapter will act as some sort of router, basically, and it'll give priority to its own traffic, so you don't degrade the quality of your voice calls. There's, I forget which model of support it is, but
I think that's the 3002 or 3003 or 3000 something. They have all kinds of weird model numbers.
Yeah. Just go to Sepura.com and check it out for yourself.
Yes.
There's also the Grandstream Handytone 286, which is a SIP terminal adapter. I think this one only has one FXF port.
I think it actually has two ports. I think you were wrong on that, and I believe the 46 has four.
Does it?
I don't know. I'm not sure about that, but I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. Anyway, I haven't used it, but I'm sure the quality is somewhat better than the actual telephone itself.
Mm-hmm.
So that's $65.
It's a whole lot easier to make adapters rather than phones.
Yeah, because the adapter is just little boxes, while the phone has all sorts of usability and human factor considerations that go into it.
Yes. And then there's the granddaddy of them all, the Cisco ATA-186.
Mm-hmm. This was the one that Vonage used to send out way, way back in the early days of Vonage. And
it's made by Cisco, so you know it has to be good.
Mm-hmm. And that's between $50 and $125. Ironically, here's the funny thing, at least the way I understand it. The group that originally developed the Cisco ATA-186 went from Cisco and started up Sepura and started making their own terminal adapters. And now Sepura is being bought by Cisco.
Ah, what a tangle web we leave.
Well, what a tangled web we leave, of course, because...
Yeah, true. It actually does kind of work. Oh, well.
Mm-hmm. And finally, on to the really cool things, the Digium Zaptel cards. These are cards that you buy and you stick inside your asterisk box. And you can plug analog telephones or telephone lines directly into them. So there's the TDM400P, which is the analog card. That one comes with little modules, and you specify which modules you want. So you can either choose modules that connect telephones to your asterisk box, or you can choose modules that connect telephone lines to your Asterisk box. So in case you have a home phone line that you want to share among multiple extensions, you can do that.
Asterisk makes it all easy.
Yes. Asterisk. I was going to say about Linux. It makes difficult things easy and easy things like poking yourself in the eye with a white-hot sewing needle.
All right. Asterisk makes everything easy. We'll just leave it with that.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you're not an advertising major.
Obviously, I'm not. There's also the GDE405P and 410P, and these are quad-span T1E1 cards. So say you're doing a larger Asterisk installation, you're bringing in a channelized T1 or a primary rate ISDN line into your Asterisk box. You get this card, and the thing just goes right in. It's a beautiful, beautiful card. The TDM400P, fully loaded with modules, is about $300, and the TE405 and 410P are about $1,500.
But if you're going to buy a T1, it's well worth it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, considering how much you're going to spend on the T1, you've got the pockets for the 405 and 410P.
Since we're moving on, we have all these phones. How the heck do we interconnect them with other voice over IP things? And
yes,
we're going to go over the various ways to connect them.
Asterisk is fun, but it's really fun when you can call outside of your Asterisk box.
Bah, who says that?
No, I'm
anyway,
calling my living room repeatedly over and over and over.
Hey, it's a PBX's R, man.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the first major protocol there is called Session Initiation Protocol, which is abbreviated as SIP. We've heard SIP more than a few times, and that's what we mean. We're not talking about drinking drinks. SIP is cool. SIP is okay. It's signaling protocol only. The actual media transport is handled by RTP, which is a real-time protocol. It's another streaming audio protocol. The protocol was developed by the IETF and not the ITU, which is the International Telecommunications Union, people who essentially design all the major standards for telephone systems. And instead of phone numbers, it uses something similar to a URL, and it would be sort of sip://strom@stromcarlson.com. SIP is intended to be a peer-to-peer protocol, meaning, we don't have to connect to a central server to find out what's going on, which is sort of true. We'll go into that later. It's fairly ubiquitous. Most VoIP phones, terminal adapters, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, they all speak SIP because everyone uses SIP, such as Vonage, Packet H, Broad Voice, et cetera. SIP does not play well with NAT, Network Address Translation. If you're behind some type of firewall, you have to open about 15,000 ports to get RTP working.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why this is basically when you're initiating a phone call, because it's a signaling protocol only, so you talk to the computer and say, hey, I have a phone call for you. Connect to me at this IP address. And if it assumes that it's a 192.168 address, the computer on the other side is going, what? I don't know where to connect to that to. And there's lots of kludges and workarounds for it, but it's not good. It's very much a kludge. Another protocol is H323. It was the first real voice over IP and all that stuff developed in 1996 by the ITU. It's far more similar to traditional telephony signaling protocols than SIP. However, it does also use RTP for media transport. Used internally by inter-exchange carriers, which are people that carry phone calls between various
basically,
telephone companies.
Basically, inter-exchange carriers, are the long-distance companies. So
yeah, long-distance companies. That's what I was looking for.
Yeah, AT&T, MCI, Global Crossing, so on.
Yeah, exactly.
Sprint.
H323 sucks, and therefore it's fairly unpopular in the do-it-yourself VoIP world. It's difficult to implement in software, and it's a major pain in the ass to get working. For example, the original copy of Microsoft NetMeeting uses H323. Ugh. And our quote that we found, Strom was sitting in pound asterisk on freenode.net, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
That's one. And it's was a major developer's handle is Jerjer, and we got a quote of, just don't use H323, and all your problems will be solved.
And that is so true.
And very much so. One of the other major protocols out there is the EECS protocol, which stands for Inter-Asterisk Exchange. And it's developed by Mark Spencer of Digium, so you know it has to be good. It covers both signaling and media transport. It's a streamlined, simple protocol. Essentially what Mark did is he looked at SIP, he looked at H323 and said, both these suck. Let me go design my own protocol that solves all the shortcomings of these. And thus, EECS was born. Does not suffer the same, NAT traversal issues of like RTP and SIP and all that good stuff. Data and signaling happen via UDP on port 4569. Poke a small single hole in your firewall and you're all set. Considering it's called inter-asterisk exchange, it's very well supported by asterisk. Duh. Support in the terminal equipment is rare. Like, for example, the phone I was talking about, the reason why I got it mainly is because it supports EECS, and it was one of the few devices out there that did that. Digium EECS terminal adapter seeks it, and that's about it, besides my phone. It's per protocol from any public switch telephone network termination providers, and because it's just very fire and forget, set it up, and you don't need to worry about configuring it and fixing everything, and suddenly it stops working. It's a fairly robust protocol. A couple other protocols that are really not used a lot is MGCP, which is the Media Gateway Control Protocol. The only thing I've ever seen this used for is one of my ATAs. It was previously used by AT&T CallVantage, and that's the only place I've ever seen it used. Apparently AT&T used it for a while. I don't think they still use it, but I could be wrong. And I picked up a used ATA, which I had to reflash and reconfigure, and that's the only thing I have ever seen using MGCP. The other thing is Cisco's Skinny Client Control Protocol, which is SCCP. And with Cisco phones, you have two options. You can use SIP or you can use SCCP. SCCP. Cisco's Call Manager, which is their VoIP solution, uses SCCP. And they use SIP because everyone else uses SIP. So there's two drivers for it. There's CHAN Skinny and CHAN SCCP 2. SCCP 2, goodness, that doesn't roll right off the tongue, does it, is a third-party plugin which has fairly better support than CHAN Skinny. But if you have the choice, use SIP. Some older Cisco phones can't use SIP, and you're forced to use one of these, but if you can get away with it, use SIP. Save yourself some time and effort.
There's two drivers for asterisk for Skinny, and they both kind of suck.
Okay, and we're going to go interconnecting asterisk with codecs, and this is Strom's thing, and if you would really like to blitz right through this, because we're kind of running short on time.
All right. Well, in order to understand codecs, you need to understand how audio is encoded on the telephone network. So we're going to just kind of breeze through this. If you have an analog waveform, which gets sliced up into a bunch of different time slices, still analog, but, you know, just little slices, little pulses of amplitude. So this becomes pulse amplitude modulation. Just still analog, but it's sliced up in a little bit of time. Then each value is quantized, and you wind up with PCM, pulse code modulation, which is what happens on the phone network, and also just raw PCM at 44.1 kilohertz is what you hear when you listen to a compact disc. So PCM is cool. However, for the phone network, you know, you don't want to use all that bandwidth, because 44.1 kilohertz is kind of unnecessarily wide band for a telephone call. And even if you go down to if you look at the range of human voice frequencies, the vast majority of them are under 4,000 hertz. So using the Nyquist theorem, we kind of just realized that 8,000 hertz is the best frequency to encode voice at for the telephone network. So you do if you want to do 16 bits, 8,000 hertz, that gives a fairly good, clear representation of the voice on the other end. But 16-bit would be 128 kilobits a second. And that's a little much to send over the phone network when you consider that this specification was kind of derived in the 50s and 60s. So what happens is something called Mu-Law companding. And that basically uses a logarithmic scale to compress to give a lot of resolution to the voice frequencies close to the center of the amplitude, close to the center of the waveform, at the lower amplitudes where most of the action happens. And it still allows you to do higher amplitudes, though at less resolution. But honestly, at those higher amplitudes, the resolution doesn't matter so much. So basically, you get 16 bits of apparent audio quality and 8 bits of address space. However, 64 kilobits a second is quite a bit too much for some people, especially on low bandwidth connections, or in cases where a lot of telephone calls have to be put through your connection suddenly that just doesn't have enough bandwidth. So there are various compression schemes which are used to further compress voice and further encode the voice into a smaller amount of data. The first one is called adaptive differential pulse code modulation.
It's a takeoff on regular differential pulse code modulation, which instead of using an 8-bit sample, uses 4 bits. And what it does is instead of encoding each sample individually, it describes the change from one sample to the next. So it uses 4 bits regardless of the original source resolution, and that can kind of get ugly if you've got a really high-frequency sound. So adaptive differential PCM uses a varying number of bits depending on the complexity of the sample. However, it's capped at 32 kilobits a second, so you will lose a little tiny bit of resolution. LPC is linear predictive coding. What it does is it uses vocoders to compress the speech even further. Instead of actually compressing the speech itself, what happens is it describes how to regenerate that speech on the other end, which kind of works, although vocoders are also used in the singing synthesizer effects in a lot of modern music. So if you listen to your mobile phone or your compressed audio really carefully, you can actually start to hear that sort of stuff. So those are the main types of compression schemes. So as we went over, on the PSTN, it's 64 kilobits a second synchronous bandwidth for wireline telephones. Mu-Log companding in North America and, I believe, Japan, and A-Log companding in the rest of the world. If you're doing bit robbing in band, it's 56 kilobits a second instead of 64, but it sounds roughly the same.
And essentially what bit robbing is it takes a bit every sample and says whether or not the line has been supervised or it does other type of area signaling in it.
Right. So for mobile phones, which obviously sound worse, you only get between 4 and 13 kilobits a second as opposed to the 64 you got on the regular telephone network.
Yikes.
There's all sorts of crazy audio codecs, and as I'm sure many of you know, it sounds like crap. So what are the costs of speech compression? Well, first off, there's an increased CPU load required for transcoding. If you're doing everything in Mu-Log, you know, the CPU doesn't have to do any work. It just has to switch the packets, and that's really easy. I mean, even a 286, I think, or a 386 can route Ethernet packets fast enough to saturate T1. So as long as it's just telling the packets where to go, there's not a lot of load that's required. But if you've got to compress the audio from, Mu-Log down to GSM or something, then the CPU has to do that work. And so it cuts down on the capacity of your Asterisk box to handle calls. That 790-call box, which described earlier, when you go to GSM, it drops down to maybe 100 or 200 concurrent calls. That's pretty CPU intensive. There is no guarantee that two pieces of equipment will speak the same codecs, and this is especially true if using some sort of non-standard bit rate or some weird variation on a codec.
That may work well for you, but may be completely incompatible with everyone else.
Yes. Some codecs require licensing, so you have to actually pay money to use them. The G.729 codec from Digium requires a $10 license per box per channel. So if you've got a box and you want to have, say you have two boxes and you want to have, five telephone calls between them at any given time using that codec, you have to buy five licenses for each box at $10 a pop.
Yeah, well, that sounds expensive.
Yeah, it does. And the other thing is that codecs don't handle all sorts of sounds that well. People will have trouble understanding certain words, and it's difficult to understand people who have poor diction. And when you think about it,
like
it
me.
Makes sense. Your diction isn't all that bad.
I stumble over words a lot.
I'm sure mine's just as horrible. But if you think about it, the codec was designed to compress speech, but there are cases where... What was I going to say? The codecs are designed to compress speech, but they're designed under the assumption that people are going to be talking normally. And when they do tests, they find people who enunciate, and they enunciate, and they speak in perfectly standard English. But the standard and the vernacular are a bit different. And so, if you mumble or if you got poor diction or, whatever, it's going to sound like crap.
I think a very good, interesting way to put this, it's a lot like handwriting recognition. Mm-hmm. You have a person with perfect handwriting, you'll work well. If you have someone like me who looks like, a doctor writing it, it'll fail miserably.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing is that, there are a lot of sounds on the phone that aren't voice. Background noise, and especially music on hold. In codec land, that's pure torture. You
can be like Oedipus and gouge your eyes out. And some of them are so absolutely horrible that they'll even make you have sex with your mother.
Someone actually came up with that during our DEF CON presentation, and we just absolutely loved that term. We thought it was a hoot. Thank you, whoever you are, if you're listening to the show. Anyway, Strom, what are the benefits of speech compression?
There's only one bullet point on this slide, and that's each call uses less bandwidth. That's the only benefit of speech compression. So if you've got the bandwidth to throw at your calls, please don't compress them. Use EULA or ELA. So what codecs are supported by Asterisk? There's G.711, which is EULA or ELA companding. There's G.726, which is 32 kilobit a second ADPCM. There's G.729, which is a kind of linear predictive codec, which uses a code table to regenerate the sound. So this is kind of the same concept as the vocoder. It says, okay, this sound sounds like code number 35, so play code number 35 for two frames. And this one sounds like 72, so play 72 for a frame. And G.729 requires the license from Digium. There's GSM, which is 13 kilobits a second, which is a predictive codec, and that's the one that's used on GSM phones. Surprise, surprise.
Wow.
So if you want your desk phone to sound as bad as your mobile phone, you can use GSM. There's the Internet Low Bandwidth Codec, which is the 13.3 kilobit per second LPC used by Skype. And it sounds passably okay, but for people who rave about Skype's audio quality, it sounds just like ILBC to me. And that's what it is. So, sorry, you lose. There's also an open source codec called Speaks, SPEEX. It's also a 13.3 kilobits per second code excited linear prediction, much like GSM. And I think it's based on the Ogg Vorbis stuff. And finally, there is LPC10, which is for you to use in situations where you've got no bandwidth whatsoever and you still need to get a phone call through. This is 2.4 kilobit per second linear predictive coding, and it sounds more ghastly than you can possibly imagine.
And he's not kidding about that. And just to prove how ghastly it sounds, I'm going to have up on my website, blackratchet.org, a bunch of if you remember from our first episode, 105, we had a song from this band called Red Eye Flight. It was called Natalie. And what we have done is we got permission from them to use it, and basically they released it Creative Commons. And what we've done is we've encoded them with various all of these codecs we talked about. So essentially it sounds okay in some, like EULA, and it sounds like crap in a lot of it. And actually, speaking of EULA, you're listening right now to EULA because we both use EULA to record the show. And it sounds like phones, but, it sounds doesn't sound that bad. Eventually, it would sound a whole lot worse if we were using LPC-10.
Yeah. No, it would just sound like robots talking, and you would really, really want to go have sex with your mother after listening to that one.
Yes. We should do. We should re-encode this with LPC-10.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's get into interconnecting Asterisk, because, Asterisk is fun. You can talk to your other people using Asterisk. You can talk to people using VoIP, but what happens if you want to call your mom who doesn't have some type of VoIP setup?
And presumably you're calling your mom not to ask her out on a date.
Okay. Let's just drop that, all right?
But it's so fun to talk about.
Oh, yeah. What are you, from Arkansas? Not to offend anyone from Arkansas out there. Sorry. Anyway, let's go over various companies that provide a ability to take your VoIP conversation and forward it over to the PSTN, which is the Public Switched Telephone Network. First company we're going to talk about is Newfone. Newfone is cool. I like Newfone. They have very cheap rates, and they're essentially geared for Asterisk. They use Asterisk exclusively, I believe. Their caller ID is spoofable, and they have insanely easy to provision 800 numbers, or 888 or 866. Essentially, you click a button, and they send you an email saying, here's your number, use it however you want. And I never thought I'd have about 5 or 6 800 numbers ever to my name, and with Newfone, I do, thank God. Newfone's cool because they're very easygoing. Essentially, when I first set my account up with them, I said, what happens? I PayPal'd them a bunch of money, and they said, okay, well, that'll be fine. And I said, so what happens when my PayPal money runs out? Are you going to shut off my service? Oh, no, we'll just send you an email. We'll just send us some money, and we'll be fine. Oh, okay. Yeah, proper call completion progress, and we'll go over this later about why this is such a big deal, but essentially it allows you to hear rings, busies, and intercepts, which for some people that's a major problem with their VoIP providers. The problems with new phones is they're Michigan DIDs only. DIDs are phone numbers. So you can only get phone numbers in Michigan, which is good if your parents live in Michigan or if you want to call actually has unlimited long distance, but for most of us that doesn't do very well. They're also not too freak-friendly. They disabled caller ID spoofing during DC-12 with Lucky 225 and Strom. I believe Not Theory got a cease and desist order from them.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me to believe that they don't trust us for some reason.
And I think they also turned off all caller ID delivery during DEF CON 13.
I heard that. I didn't actually get a chance to play with that, so I can't say that.
Yes.
Astrolink is cool. Astrolink is another kind. They, you know more about Astrolink.
Yeah. Well, we were really, really happy with Astrolink until DEF CON happened. So, for the most part, they're reliable, although for some reason lately they've been really jittery, even with my own box. We set up a system for DEF CON, which we won't go into detail here because we don't have the time. But we set up an asterisk-based schedule of the convention, and we decided to use Astrolink for our carrier because they said they would be more than happy to handle that much load. And all of our calls became jittery. And so the jitter problem continues. I'm sure it'll go away in the near future, but for the time being, it's jittery. But up until DEF CON happened, Astrolink was nothing but reliable for me, so I'll sing the praises there. They do their inbound via toll-free numbers, and they deliver class of service, also known as ANI II digits, if you want it. And they also do proper call completion. The only problem is the account management interface is a little kludgy on their website, but it's actually gotten better.
Kludgy,
close enough.
Can't stand the Voice Pulse Connect.
Well, you don't hear me insulting Orge.
Yeah, I got away from that. Leave me alone. Voice Pulse Connect's cool. Their pros is they have unlimited incoming minutes on inbound EECS calls. Their inbound numbers, they have inbound numbers everywhere, and they're the only EECS provider that actually does this.
Mm-hmm.
They have proper call progress because does Astrolink have proper call progress?
Yes, I just
I forget. No, VoIP's just the one that we don't like. We'll get to them next.
Yeah.
But the problem is with VoicePulse is that they are the most expensive EECS providers for outbound call termination. How much do they cost?
2.7. Yeah, 2.79 or 2.8 or something like that.
Yes, and meanwhile,
3 cents a minute.
Yeah, well, and new phone, for example, costs 2 cents a minute. And our next provider, VoIPChess, only costs 1.3 cents a minute. And that's their major pro. They're cheap. Actually, I think we got corrected on that. I think it's like 1.29 cents a minute.
Yeah, 1.29. So shouts
to Avid for that one. VoIPChat, they don't have incoming service, so you can't get phone numbers from them. Their caller ID delivery is unreliable at best, and they don't have proper call completion. So
I'm not so sure about this. I think I tried spoofing with VoIPChat recently, and it started working. And
proper call completion or caller ID?
The caller ID and the proper call completion. In fact, let's do a little test since I've got my asterisk box in front of me.
Okay.
Let me see. Let me do a disconnected number.
508-995-9972.
I like 310 Gladstone 4 9999.
All right. Oh, wow.
It's so busy now. Please try your call again later.
So, yes, VoIPChat now does proper call completion, so you can hear it.
Hallelujah.
And whatnot. So disregard that bit on the slide. And I think they now also do caller ID correctly.
Okay, and our final provider tonight, and this is basically where we wrap it up. We have more of this presentation. I think we're going to break this over two parts, is BroadVoice. And the cool thing about BroadVoice is that they have cheap direct number dial numbers in most rate centers. I got one in Boston. From what we can tell, they're run by phone freaks, which is always a plus.
When you order their service and you buy the hardware that they ship to you, they also ship to you a little pin, which is the Bell logo with the no smoking cross through it.
Which is kind of sad, but cool at the same point.
Yeah.
Yes. So the other cool thing about Broad Voice is they have 24/7 phone support, so you can call them up anytime. And the coolest feature, in my opinion, about Broad Voice is they have caller ID with name, which all of these other caller ID things that we were talking about, they only provide caller ID numbers. But this actually has CNAM lookups.
Mm-hmm.
However, the problem with them is that they are SIP only. They don't support EECS, which is something I always really want to, like, they're actually based in Massachusetts, and I really want to just send them a resume and say, hire me and let me set up your EECS setup so I can use EECS with you. But I should actually do that just for the hell of it. Broad Voice is prone to service outages. They had a nice geez, Strom, have you ever had a service outage with Broad Voice?
Oh, well, my incoming number doesn't work right now.
Wow. Yeah, see, how long has it not been working?
I haven't really tested it, but apparently this has been out for several weeks now.
Yes, and what's their response to you?
Their response to me when I called on Sunday was, well, we are getting engineers to look at it, and they will contact you.
Yes, I heard someone say Broad Voice. When they say that, they're essentially saying, I'm going to hide under my desk now and hope you don't call back. I think someone said that on the asterisk, one of the asterisk lists. And for the most part, it was right. They also had a weekend where they got into their fight with Global Crossing, and Global Crossing cut them off, and no numbers were brought inbound or outbound. And that's annoying. That's how would you like it if your phone service dropped out for a week,
mm-hmm.
for a weekend? Their phone support, while it's 24/7, is slow at best. I've waited on phone for hours at a very odd time, like 1 a.m., when I would think no one would be calling. But
well, that's
apparently
because the phone rings and the guy, kind of wakes up from his nap and decides, looks at the phone, says, maybe I'll get some coffee and a snack. And I'll have that first.
Well, I assume they're hiding under their desk still or something.
Mm-hmm.
And while they have caller ID with name support, sometimes it's just very flaky. The slide point says, will CNAM work today? Not always. Sometimes it just gives me this strange number that's 6 digits long and does the same number with the caller ID name. Of course, sometimes it also says, 617-555, Boston, Massachusetts. Well, yeah, but 555, it gives you a number, and it just says Boston, Massachusetts rather than the actual name. So it's flaky.
Fortunately, I haven't had a day yet where all the numbers come up as cat sex, but if they want to play that practical joke on me, that'd be amusing.
That would be amusing, indeed. So anyway, we're just going to sort of blitz right through this, and we're going to continue this at some later point. We'll have Asterisk Part 2.
Mm-hmm.
We won't do this next week, just so you know. We'll have some other topic for you so you can get back to computers a little bit.
Yeah. Weren't we going to do what were we going to do next week, the future of telephony?
I don't know. I think we should have a computer topic next week. Do you feel like a computer topic? Strom is in charge next week, Strap yourselves in, because Lord knows what he's going to do. I'm going to be on vacation on the weekend.
So. All right. Well, I will have to think up a topic for next week. It's either going to be some sort of computer topic, maybe, odd computer hardware stories, because I've been dealing with a lot of Sun equipment lately, which is not PC equipment, obviously, or the future of telephony. So
we may have telephones. Okay. Strom is a phone freak. We never deny that.
Well, I'm just thinking of things that'll actually go over well,
Yes, true. We don't want to suck.
Yes.
So, do you have any announcements?
Again, Strom's music review. Send in your song. Send in your demo album, and we'll play it, and we'll give you guys a review, and we'll get you guys in front of some listeners.
Because we're cool like that.
Yes.
Let's see. Boston 2600. My Boston 2600 group is trying to start an up-to-date list of current 2600 groups. And we want to start having a way of coordinating things with the various groups for hope and other things. We're trying to have we're calling the project 2600 United, and I think in a couple of weeks we're going to have a couple of my good friends on, and we're going to discuss the various projects we have planned for hope and try to stir up some interest for them.
Oh, and the other thing I totally forgot about.
Let me get the email address out here. So that would be 2600united@gmail.com. Or you can join us on FNET, which is the IRC thing, and we're either in #Boston-2600 or #Boston-2600. Your choice. People are usually there. And I'm usually there 9 to 5 lurking. Just give me a couple minutes to respond because I'm at work. So just drop us a line, or you can just email me, and I'll point you into contact with the correct people.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, you were saying?
Yeah, I forgot about TourCon is coming up in San Diego in a couple of weeks.
Oh, when's that? Do you have an
Let me pull up the dates. It's at tourcon.org, TORCON.org.
The Schmoo Group should say you should go there, so that's all I know about TourCon.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a two-track. It's from September 16th to the 18th at the San Diego Convention Center, and I will be there.
And so, I think Natus is thinking about going. So
yeah, Natus is definitely
run into that. Strom and run into Natus in San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, shouts? I have shouts. I actually went onto the IRC channel and asked who wanted shouts. So I have a shout to Pony Boy, Emmanuel Bobstein,
I think that was Emmanuel Boobstein.
Boobstein? I thought it was Bobstein. Boobstein, I don't know, whatever. He's new. I haven't seen. I think the first time I saw him was today. And Kyle L. wants me to say that he's lame. So Kyle L., you be
you're
the
lame. Let's say it together.
Yes.
Kyle
you're,
L.,
no,
you're
lame. Yeah, whatever.
That didn't work so well. We're lame.
Yes, we're lame. We can't coordinate. Our closing music is a group called Nordbeat, and I got this back from when MP3.com was active. Dear God. Mm-hmm. It's called Nordbeat's Hymn, and I actually went to their website today, and they call themselves Nordbeat Trance Music and Software Company. So I thought that was a hoot, and I'll just try to give them shouts out for that. Email, as always, at radio@binrev.com. And I guess we'll see you next week. Same hack time.
Same hack channel. I'm not a man of God.